You're listening to the Lone Star Gridiron Sports Network.
It's time to talk a little Dallas-Fort Worth. Hello, everybody. Terry Bennett, Grant Goodwin. See, I'm pleased doing that. Terry Bennett, Matt Diggs here in studio. That's why it feels weird because we're literally doing this like we do sideline to sideline.
You're thinking of Grant.
I'm thinking of Grant. It is the Top Shelf Salsa DFW Metroplex. Live in studio is Matt Diggs. We are glad to have you. I got to tell you, that Frisco, and it kind of felt weird. Somehow we did it easily. But I felt like we were cheating on the DFW show, talking these big games. We're going to talk about them here on the DFW show. But I will say this. This is going to be a little bit of a different show, simply because you're in studio. This is going to tend to be a little bit more informal. I mean, we're going to talk games and stuff, but like the first topic we're going to talk about is DFW related, but it's got nothing to do with the games today that we're going to talk about. It's because we were actually watching on the studio TV. Whenever Grant and I record, we just always throw on YouTube old football classic games and stuff. Right. And so we were talking about Texas Stadium. And so I wanted to lead the show off with that because I miss Texas Stadium, and I don't miss how it was falling apart, and it was falling apart. But I just miss how it was, at least for us that covered the game as the media. It was a lot different than it is now.
Absolutely.
Back then, they kind of just put you up there in the press box or in the aux boxes, which were the best places to go, and just let you be.
Right.
You just go do your thing. We're down here. You don't mess with us. We don't mess with you. Today, or in today's world, and believe me, all the amenities are there at AT&T Stadium, but it just doesn't feel the same.
It doesn't.
There's just something about it. And it's been 10 years, so this isn't it's new, you'll get used to it. But you did bring up a point in the Frisco show. Maybe it's because we haven't got used to it, because it seems like every playoffs, three of the weeks are blocked out for concerts, college basketballs, or Jimmy Joe paid $2 million to go have a party and get drunk on the Blue Star.
Exactly. And, you know, from a media perspective, Irving is just more centrally located. Yeah. Arlington is, you know, a little bit more out there. And because of the parking situation out there with the new Globe Life Park being built, it's not easy to get in and out. Getting media credentials is not easy.
That's really changed. And I know people are going, well, how do we care? But it's just, we're just telling you how it is.
We're telling you our perspective.
It used to be way different, to where you simply said, you called down and you said, hey, look, this is where I'm at. And they said, okay. Now, man, it's like you got to go through triplicate verification. You know, we listen to 7 minutes of your show, and at one point we don't like that.
Right.
I don't know what it is about the UIL, but sometimes I want to look at the UIL and go, really? Do you really think people are that? Yeah, we've all did the thing where, hey, we have a friend and he wants to go to a game, so we'll give him a pass.
Right.
But is that one $10 ticket really breaking the UIL that we need to have this type, especially now at state championships? And I'm sorry, and Chris might be like, dude, shut up, because we do have a good relationship with the UIL. And I love what they do for us. But sometimes
your phone is already lighting up. I see it.
Sometimes with the media stuff, it's just like, really, guys? I mean, yeah, so what if a dude's working for a small town paper that doesn't have anything to do with the state championship games? You can't find him room. This is a chance for him to say, I've been to the state championship games. This is a chance for him to one thing that people don't realize, coaches and media alike, this is also our chance to network.
Yeah.
And what does it hurt to let a dude from San Jacinto County come up, even though there might not be a team in San Jacinto County?
You know, those are valid points, and I'll put it out there. I haven't been to the state championships in the last couple of years.
I haven't either.
It's lost its fun because of all of that. It's almost become a marketing opportunity for the UIL and sponsors, as opposed to the media and the fans and those connections. It's on TV. Every game is on TV, and it is just such a pain to do all of that. And you just get these Twitter feeds where, you know, we're covering the game and 20 people are covering all doing the same thing. And, you know, you see my Twitter feed is like, you know, 20 people telling you they got a touchdown. And everybody's doing it kind of the same sanitized way. And a lot of people, and we talked about this on Twitter this past week, that I feel like a lot of people have lost their personalities, you know, in what we call the Texas high school football media mafia, because there's been a good group of people who have moved on. They're doing NHL, NFL things, and, you know, that's kind of the nature of high school football. People graduate and move on. But Texas Stadium...
As you're listening to a show with two guys that have been doing this for 15 years.
Right. But Texas Stadium just brings us back to that, the good old days, you know, and back to where there were stories being told. And one of my favorite memories ever in life, I tell this story frequently, is I was up at the press box up at Texas Stadium, and Bill Parcells and Gordon Wood were just having a conversation about football.
Yep.
And just... all the feels when that was going on. That was Texas Stadium.
I'll tell you one for me is, and it's perfect because it's the night of the last state championship game there, Salina versus Carthage. It was Carthage's coming out party. And Grant and I, that's back when we were still broadcasting, and we're broadcasting state championship game. So we get to the game, and we get there really early. It was one of those days where you leave at 4 from – I was living in Garland at the time, and we left at 4 thinking – 2.5 hours of traffic and everything broken. We're sitting at Texas Stadium by 5:20.
Right.
So they let us in and we get up there and lo and behold, it's Roger Emmerich. And me, Grant, and Roger Emmerich sit there from 5 o'clock to 7 before people really started coming in and just talk.
Right.
And that was the first time I knew who Roger was, obviously, but that was the first time I had actually, other than in passing, how you doing, Mr. Emmerich? Hello. And he didn't know who I was, to where we just sat and talked football. All of that, it just feels different. And a lot of it is, you know, old manism, nostalgia, because it has been 10 years since we've been there. But in my opinion, and this goes on, and the high school level, at the college level, at the pro level, AT&T Stadium, 10 years later, still does not feel at home. It doesn't
right.
feel comfortable.
And a lot of coaches would come up. There was so much networking going on at Texas Stadium. Now, you see some coaches up there. You know,
harder for them to get up there now.
It's harder for them to get up there. They got to know somebody before they get up there. And it's a lot of Arlington ISD coaches up there because
they know people.
They know people. They know the people up there. And, man, I remember that back row, you know, the two rows at Texas Stadium. You had the press in the front row, but the back row was just a who's who of coaches.
Yep.
You know, just you know, talk to Johnny Ringo up there. You know, hey, Diggs, how you doing? And it's just such good memories. And, you know, the crown, you know, just having being on the field and getting to look over and really seeing how pronounced that crown was at Texas Stadium. There was just a better day, and yes, we are totally digressing into old manisms when it comes into that back in our day.
But you know, sometimes the back in our day is right. And you and I are two people that we openly acknowledge that 9 times out of 10, the newness is better.
Right.
Technology is better. Advances are better. But every once in a while, you can look back. And I'm not saying they should not have built the stadium, but I do wonder if, about in 2001 or 2002, if Jerry Jones wouldn't have gotten the idea of I want to one day have my own cathedral, if he would have said I want to keep Texas Stadium and I want to, you know, make sure it's always top of the line, it's modernized, where would we be with the UIL? Would we even have the central location
right.
thing? I don't think – I mean, you got to realize, folks, that what Jerry Jones did, that completely changed the UIL, because I don't think you ever have centralized games without DFW being in the rotation.
Right.
And DFW is not in the rotation without having a dome stadium. And so you have to wonder, would we still be this to this day? And I think we would be.
Probably.
I think we would still be to this day. There could be two state championships being played at the same moment, one in Abilene, one in Dallas, and in 30 minutes Houston has one. You know, I'm not saying that, and some people think that that's better. I do think centralized UIL, other than for the local fan of, and it rarely happens where the far west has to go to the far east and all that, I think anybody can acknowledge whether – you think the UIL is crass for it, and it's all about money, which I always laugh at. Don't you want the UIL to have money? They're the ones running things. The centralized is the best thing that's happened to Texas high school football. It took Texas high school football from being mythically awesome inside the state to mythically awesome outside the state, where people, when you hear Texas, it's Dallas Cowboys high school football. That's the first two sports-related things you usually hear.
It is, but still at the same time, you know – 12 o'clock games on Thursday afternoon. You know, is that really your football spirit right there when you got that going on?
I think it's become – at first it wasn't, but now to me, when I think 4A, 3A state championship, of course, I'm like you. I'm going this year because we're actually going to be doing some pre- and post-game stuff, and we're hosting it. We're going to do live – be checking out, by the way. Listen to that, people. We'll be doing some live stuff there. But I'm like you. Normally what I've done the last – I went to Houston. Houston in 2015 was the last one I went to.
Right.
The last 4 years, I have – one of the days I'll order a pizza right when the game starts, and I'll just chew on pizza and wings all day. The next day I'll usually cook a soup, and I'll eat that for 2 days. And so to me, 3A and 4A do now fit into that. Thursday at 2,
right,
I'm watching, you know, the 3A game. Friday at 2, I'm watching the 4A game. But you are right. When it first started, it was a little weird to be – state champ, and it is a little weird to be like, yay, we're state champs. Hey, that's great. Could y'all please move?
Yes.
Could y'all get off the field? That part, there is some weirdness to that.
There is, and, you know, from the media perspective, it's really been sanitized to it. People are not, I mean, it's all the same thing, you know? So it's like, what's one more voice as far as all that goes? You know, but... that's all I got to say about that, I guess.
I know you're always free to talk whatever you want. Just a little bit of a reminisce. You and I have been talking about this. I want to do this. We're doing some big things with our network, which we're not ready to announce yet, but we're going to announce in the new year, and it's all good stuff. And one of that is we're going to be having different avenues for shows that aren't just Texas high school football. And one of them, I definitely would love to get. Some of the members of that tooth that what started, because you and I started doing this in an era where things like this was not done.
Right.
I mean, I will literally sign my name in blood guaranteeing you that you and I were two of the first, if not the two first, that did a weekly high school football show on the internet in Texas that wasn't localized, that wasn't centralized. Mine was regionalized, but we're talking East Texas. And,
right.
And at the time, I was doing – in fact, that's how you and I got to know each other, was it was the joke of – I still remember the first episode. We're arguing about who is East Texas and who's not. And so we're working through, and we're going, well, you can have this one, and I'll take this one. And you can have – and we got to Canton and Will's Point, and I was like, you can have it. And you're like, no, y'all can have it. I'm like, no. You cover that, guy. Because, I mean, back then, we called it the Gaza Strip of football.
Right.
Because at that time – that was before Gary Joe Kenny went to Canton. At that time, that whole area, which was Maybank, which was Kemp, Will's Point, they all were terrible.
Right.
I mean, two wins was like they hung a banner for them.
And now we're fighting to keep Malakoff. Come on, Malakoff.
Oh, that is the weirdest one for me. Being in East Texas, I never looked at Malakoff as East Texas.
Right.
It has East Texas qualities.
Sure.
It's a small town, but that's a Dallas-Fort Worth. That's a Southern Dallas-Fort Worth team to me.
I agree.
Them, Grandview, Corsicana, Mildred. Talking about all small schools, of course,
right.
Corsicana. All those, that's – DFW has them. They have nothing to do – they're more Central Texas than they are East Texas, if anything.
Yeah, Malakoff, they start, I see Athens as East Texas. And
I see Athens as East Texas.
And going on there. But Malakoff, it's kind of the end of that 175 corridor with Gun Barrel City,
yep,
and Kemp and Eustace and all of that, and I think that kind of ends at Malakoff and then moves on into East Texas. But we have these arguments. It's my pinned tweet on Twitter where the Metroplex is defined by the census as including those counties, and people want to say, well, the Metroplex is Dallas County and Tarrant County and maybe Collin. People are arguing with me about Gunter, you know, being DFW. Like, well, that's Texoma. Well, what's Texoma?
What's Texoma?
Texoma? You know, it's like that one county strip all the way up to Wichita Falls on the Red River. That's Texoma.
No, that's and folks, you need to wake up. In 100 years, Marshall, Texas will be part of the DFW Metroplex. I mean, it really will.
Yeah.
I mean, just look at where the growth is happening. And it used to be when you drove from Marshall, which is my hometown, if you don't know, to Dallas, you had country to Longview, country to Tyler, and that's how it worked. Now,
right,
you have maybe 2 miles of country between. Now, everything, even Canton, a small town, it's five exits worth of
oh, yeah,
town on I-20. And you know, back in the day, it used to be two exits. It was Highway 19 and the Dairy Palace, and then I can't think of the road, the highway that goes to Van. That was the only two Canton exits. Now there's five.
Right.
So just accept that East Texas and Dallas are all eventually, way after we're all dead and gone, it's going to be basically the West Texas will be El Paso.
Right.
We will be Dallas, and now we'll go all the way to Louisiana, and then you're going to have Houston that's going to be South Texas, and then Austin, San Antonio will become its own. They will eventually merge into one big metroplex.
It's or big whatever entity, call it. Yep.
And that's what you're going to know Texas by, those five regions or four regions only. Anyway, what we're going to be doing today is what we always do, just a little bit longer, a little bit more informed, a little bit more relaxed, as Diggs and I are going to be talking some of the big matchups for this week and some of the matchups or some of the events that happened last week. Because in Dallas-Fort Worth, last week was one of those weeks in one of those years where this is the week people will remember for 30 years. You're going to talk about the three big things, Longview and Allen getting upset, and then Cedar Hill and Guyer, and which basically was a recreation of Plano East versus John Tyler, except for the team doing all the onside kickings actually won the game. And I didn't even mean that as a dig to you, Diggs. I was just saying it is kind of funny how that happened almost exactly 25 years ago. Just saying, Guyer realized, hey, after we've done all this, now let's play kickoff and we'll be good and we're going to win this game.
We'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that game and much others. I want to thank our title sponsor, Top Shelf Salsa. You can visit them online at topshelfsalsa.com. You can order all of their flavors right there on the website. They've got Heat Wave Salsa, Pineapple Habanero, Rojo Hot, Rojo Medium, Rojo Mild, Salsa Verde Medium Hot and Mild, and then my favorite, the Smoking Hot Slap Your Face hot sauce, and they also have Sweet Habanero Peach. As I was saying, and I've said all year on these, I pretend to like my hot sauce depending on what I'm eating. Like, if I like tacos, I want a certain style. If I want chips and hot sauce, I want something that's, well, slap your face, that kind of flavor to it. So check them out. They have all you want. Again, that's topshelfsalsa.com. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, Diggs and I are going to break things down and talk about them on the DFW Metroplex Huddle.
Imagine a game where you can pit the greatest Texas high school football teams of all time against each other. Before now, if you wanted to see the Permian Panthers of Friday Night Lights fame play Johnny Manziel's 2010 Kerrville squad, you were stuck with only your imagination. Not anymore. This new game allows you to play those dream matchups. 1983 Dangerfield, only allowed 8 points all season. 2015, Katy, 10 shutouts en route to their fourth straight championship appearance. 2008, Allen, their first of 5 championships in the state's largest classification. And so many more. Friday Night Legends is that game. What are you waiting for? Get in the game. Friday Night Legends.
To get your copy of Friday Night Legends, the game, head over to FridayNightLegends.com.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Terry Vinegrant, or Grant Goodwin, did it again, 2 times. Matt Diggs here. Dude, you do that for 12 years. It's just really hard not to. You're the only person since 2007 that has taken co-hosting with me for a whole show without Grant here. We had Step on a couple times when we were all at Old Coach, but it was always under the guise of it's sideline to sideline. We have a special guest, Matt Step. So you're the first one. I officially went on to Christian Mingle. I lied about my intentions, and I brought you here to wholly cheat on my partner, Grant Goodwin. This is the Top Shelf Salsa DFW Metroplex Huddle. So where do you want to start? Do we talk about down goes Allen, down goes Longview? Do we talk about the Denton Guyer Cedar Hill game? Because that was a game I don't think people understand how crazy that game was because of Allen and Longview, and that happened. That kind of lost the luster, but that literally was Plano East, John Tyler Part 2, except for Denton Guyer was able to finish the deal.
A little bit different. We can go two different routes with this, but I kind of want to, because I know people have been tweeting me about this. I kind of want to assess our performance last week because we did some good things in our prognostications, and I think we did some things that nobody else did. And I think some people want to be critical of things, yet we were probably right on the big picture. So let's kind of talk about our thoughts about the two big games, because we were kind of on the pulse of both of these games, you know, the Rockwall Allen thing, because we talked about significantly last week, it was the in vogue pick to pick Rockwall. And a couple of elements I don't think people are really talking about with this, we talked about it in kind of our off-show stuff, is that, and I love the quote, you can attribute it if you want, I'll just say, you know, you shared the quote of how you thought that you were told that when they saw Rockwall celebrating as hard as they did, they're not state champions.
Yeah, I won't attribute that because he'd be like, don't say that.
Don't say that.
But he made the point when we were watching the game and celebration happening, and I was still like, wow, okay, that happened. And he goes, they're not winning state. And I thought he meant Allen. And I generally said, well, yeah, duh, they got beat. He goes, no, Rockwall's not winning state. I'm like, I'm not saying they will. You still got Duncanville, but what makes you think that? He goes, look how they're celebrating. They literally just won state. Their season, no matter what happens the rest of the way, their season is validated.
Right.
And I think that's 100% right.
Yeah, I agree that they are completely validated. And we've talked about this for about 10 weeks, and we've had some series about, you know, Denton Ryan, they have to win that big game. You know, they win the 50-50 game, or they win when they're supposed to win, when they're supposed to win by 5 touchdowns. But 50-50 game comes, Denton Ryan checks out. Rockwall has been known for, you know, they do good things. They give you hope. They give you inspiration. But when it's time to play that game where they're a little bit of an underdog, they have yet to win that defining game. And that's the thing I keep saying here is I believe, and you said this last week as well, Allen was the favorite. Rockwall upset them. Rockwall was not the favorite. And when I look at, you know, you go back and look at the game, and we said this on the air, you look at the matchups, and Allen had a better running game. Allen had a better, you know, all the things that Allen had better. The one thing that we did cite that Rockwall had going for them was Jackson Smith. And when you look at the stats, that was the difference in that game. And we just misinterpreted his value to that game, because they basically kind of almost the Rex Burkhead style, they put the Superman cape on him and rode him. I mean, I can't remember, and somebody's going to say, well, this has happened. I don't have a great memory. But 15 receptions in a playoff game is a huge number.
Well, when you're picking a game, and we can reference, oh, I think so-and-so is going to do this. I think he'll go off. But when performances like that happen, and like when you also you look at Jordan Whittington at Cuero for against Pleasant Grove, you can't predict those. You can only you can say, oh, they're going to be great, but you can't predict the moments when they, as one of my coaches used to always say, when a player steps outside of the game and can see everything happening and just dominates, you can't predict that.
You can't predict
not
that.
To that. That those are the moments you just. First off, I don't think in today's society we take a moment to enjoy enough.
Right.
We want to analyze everything. That was a seminal moment. That was a moment that we'll talk about 30 years from now.
And it's crazy because he's had performances like that multiple times in his career.
Yeah.
But still, to do it on that stage with the touchdowns and just, you know, the moxie. One thing that being a part of that game, that if you're just watching the game, listening to the game, he was running his mouth to Allen the whole game. It was, in his head, a proving moment for him.
Do it at the 6A level. That stuff, again, I referenced Jordan Whittington. That was at 4A. That's what normally happens in the level that Grant and I cover. You can still have a guy, and it's only for one or two game spurts, but you can still have a guy that you know is good, but he comes into a game and just, I hate to use this term, we say this kind of stuff on sideline to sideline, flops it out.
Right.
Meaning that he big boys it.
Yeah.
He lets everybody know early, I'm the big dog on the road, and you're not getting by me. You don't see that in 6A, especially when you know that their sophomores and freshmen are all going to be D1 safeties and cornerbacks, And yet he just said, not tonight, boys.
Right.
You can cover me with one, two. You can throw safeties coming at me. You can bracket me with linebackers underneath. I was watching some of the film on that and the highlights. And at one point, he runs a slant pattern. Linebacker drops back off of his. Safety comes down to fill the post. And the corner's there, man up. And it's just a 22-yard pass to him like it was just him out there.
Right.
He honestly, is maybe one of the best, most complete wide receivers I've seen at the high school level here. And we're in an era where quarterbacks and wide receivers come out of Texas like running backs used to. I'll admit, that's probably one of the most pure superhuman efforts I've seen in the history of me watching high school football.
I mean, you just give him all of the credit. And people get mad when I say this. This is like back when I was doing message boards and things, and this might infuriate some listeners now. But I believe if you replayed that game 10 times, if we got to play the hypothetical and just reran the tape and just played and let the same game happen, started over and just the flow happened, Allen will win 9 of the 10 games.
Oh, I 100% agree with that.
And Rockwall, I don't want to call things luck because people do it, but that last play to get 2 points was just a ridiculous luck fest.
Let's see. First off, he breaks containment and he rolls out. Throws with the front body arm, meaning
the ball rolled to the quarterback.
Yes. So
you had an errant snap.
Yeah, let's start with that. Yeah, you're right. That started, and so then pressure breaks. He rolls out. His throwing hand, I don't even know if he actually technically threw it with his throwing hand because it doesn't matter because he didn't throw it. He heaves it forward, half underarm, half three quarters. There's only one place that ball can land that it's going to find the receiver, and lo and damn behold, if it doesn't land
in double coverage.
I mean, you couldn't. It's like the Dwight Clark catch against Dallas in '81. You could not recreate that if you tried 100 times.
Right. I love creative plays where, you know, a tight end kind of flares out or something. The guy just is wide open. You look at that 2-point, the Philly special.
Yeah, Philly special.
It's wide open. You just have to convert it. This was just busted from the beginning, and they played through it, and they made it.
I'll admit, as soon as, you know, I'm sitting here basically in a car in a stadium parking lot watching the play, and as soon as the snap happens, me and there was two other people, we all went, oh, that's it. Oh, yeah, it's still going. Oh, okay. Whoa, holy shit. And then oh, my God. Because as soon as the snap and it gets to him, it rolls, and the ends are crashing, you just thought, okay, play's over.
Right.
And when we say all that, people will get offended. Take that as – that's a compliment. I contend – as you can tell, I'm a Longhorn fan. I still contend if USC and Texas played 100 times back then, that USC probably would have won 70 of them.
Right.
Not that Texas wasn't talented, but they had the most seminal player on the field, and in the odds of odds, that was the night that he picked to have the best possible game he could. There's no shame in saying that, folks. Nope. Embrace that. It's fun to be the underdog that upsets – you don't have to then go, well, no, we weren't really the underdog. Yes, you are. You were the underdog. Accept it. Embrace it.
And see how they celebrated with that.
Yes.
They knew in their head, you know, I don't know if they're listening to the media or whatever, they knew how important that was as a defining moment in Rockwall Yellowjack football to win that game, to beat Allen on that stage.
And by the way, thank you, Rockwall, for answering our question from 3 weeks ago of does Allen have a rival? Because I'll be damn sure they do, at least for the next few years. You're not going to tell me there isn't a football player for Allen or a young football fan for Allen. It's not going to look at every time they hear Rockwall and just grit your teeth.
Right.
By the way, Allen, that is what a rival's call. You can't have a rivalry when you beat everybody. That was what we tried to say when we came. And you took it before the committee, and they basically were like, hey, I mean, yeah, we don't really have a rival. They threw out a couple, and it just felt like it was, okay, yeah, they're really not your rival. Rockwall, at least for the next couple years, until the next time y'all play, they're a rival now.
Right. And kind of a little bit moving on from that, we also pretty much – and I listen to several things. I read, you know, voraciously, and no one questioned Longview and Jesuit other than us.
Yep.
No one and again, I'm not going to say, oh, we picked Jesuit. We did not pick Jesuit to win the game. But we laid the case that Longview was getting overconfident, that you had E.J. Smith, a special player.
Who was the seminal player that,
right,
as great as Longview is, E.J. Smith was still the most talented guy on the field.
Right. And how you constrict the game, you make it a running-based game, anything can happen. When that happens, they did it.
Yep.
I mean, you know, we even refer to the offensive coordinator just finding ways to do that, and he did something different because he basically made E.J. Smith a workhorse in that game where E.J. Smith had not been the workhorse. It had been Jake Taylor who had been the workhorse previously, and I don't think Longview was ready for it. And we talked about how King does some certain, you know, when it's the big game, he'll kind of have different things. We talked about in the Frisco show how Highland Park and Carthage,
yeah,
they run things all year for those special moments. And I don't think Longview viewed Jesuit as that team you have to get up for.
That's a great point. And maybe they kept those off the shelf. Or if they did do different things, this was just a year that it didn't work.
Right.
And that's the thing that it's funny because Scott Surratt, and that's the Carthage coach, as Dave was talking about, we were talking about this in the Frisco show, you can hear also here on the network. And I had brought that up to Scott Surratt. I was like, man, you know, how do y'all, you know, you do that every year? And he goes, yeah. He goes, y'all reference that, because he listens to the Sideline show. He goes, y'all reference that when we win state. He goes, but y'all don't talk about the years when we make it to the semifinals and we were doing that and they didn't work.
Right.
He said, it doesn't always work. You know, he goes, believe me, every loss that I've had in the playoffs, I look back and go, if I'd have just stuck with what we do, maybe that wouldn't have happened. So maybe with Longview, they didn't. Or I contend and you contend, and I think we're right. First off, Longview, the only reason Longview was viewed as return as where they were this year was because the quarterback came back.
Right.
The rest of that team that won state was completely gutted. I think they returned 3 on offense, 4 on defense, something like that. If it would have been, if the quarterback would have been one of those that graduated, Longview would have been a top 20 team, maybe top 10, low top 10. Nobody would have thought that they were going to repeat. So everybody had in their head, well, hey, they've got Haynes King back, and he is phenomenal. You know, they're going to do it. They just never looked like Longview of Longview all year long.
Right.
And that John Tyler game, and people that didn't see the score go look up score and go, they won 42-0. Dude, Haynes King threw 3 interceptions in the first half. If John Tyler would have been a normal John Tyler team and actually had a quarterback this year, John Tyler would have probably, if not beat them, would have played them to within 7 points.
Right.
This was just not the same. There's nothing, no shame in that. Longview still had a great season. But it is kind of funny that Longview probably goes, whew, thank you, Allen, because nobody's going to remember that they got upset this week either. It's always going to be when Rockwall got beat by Allen. That's what this week is forever known for.
It's kind of funny as you kind of put together the pieces of deconstructing some of these things. You kind of look at one of their better games this year, one of their closer games against Lufkin,
yeah,
and then Lufkin lost in the first round of the playoffs unexpectedly. And then they beat Rockwall. You know, they beat Rockwall like a drum. Well, Rockwall didn't have Jackson Smith that game.
Yep.
And we saw that was the single difference in that Allen game. And now you start to look at this Rockwall season and go, okay, this makes a little more sense. And this gives credit to Jesuit to the extent that they were a beatable team. And yes, you're going to hear people from Longview accurately say Haynes Kings had that bad game. You know, he just was not there mentally, or coverages, or Jesuit did something, whatever it might be, he just had one of those games. And we even talked about this last week, that usually they will have those games, but they're such 4 or 5 touchdowns ahead, that's just when you get the 1 to 2 touchdowns.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a closer game. And Longview just could not stop the run. At the end of the day, Jesuit ran down their throat. And so many people were talking about, nobody saw this coming. Listen to this show. We deconstructed the anatomy of beating Longview last week. And we didn't think Jesuit had enough depth to do it, but we said, this is how you do it.
Yep.
And they did it. They had all of the skills, and E.J. Smith just showed up when it was time to show up.
Interesting fact, though, if you want to just kind of go, since, and you got to also look at the rounds that they played in, but since 12-7 of last year, Longview beat Spring Westfield 14-0. Then it was a 3-point win, a 1-point win, and then they destroyed Temple, but then against Jesuit, it was a 2-point win or loss. Something has happened on film, not the Westfield game because they were shut out, but since then, three solid opponents who can score have scored on Longview.
Right.
Something on film scheme-wise has been recognized by teams that have the ability to exploit it. And I'm curious to see how that's going to be going forward, because Longview returns. They went from this year being a team that doesn't return a lot. Next year they return everybody, but they've got to find a quarterback.
Right.
And so I'm just curious to see what that means. Now let's go to Plano East. Denton Guyer and Cedar Hill.
I'm literally sitting in front of you. So I can literally just jump across the studio and...
You've got Studio Cat on you, so I'm protected. But I got to say, you were one of the more entertaining Twitters, whatever you want to call it, during that game, because you have a term for what John Walsh does.
Yeah, it's just wild-ass football.
And what makes wild-ass football work is not only that it's wild-ass football, you can't always have wild-ass football, because it in theory, the whole fact that it's wild-ass means that the percentages will say that you will succeed less than you will you'll succeed less than you will fail. But it's also knowing when to start wild-ass football, when to continue wild-ass football. And it almost felt like in that game, after you look back, you go, did they purposely get behind? Because it just seemed like this felt perfect. John Walsh never once seemed like that. The score or anything rattled him.
It really didn't. And, again, this was frustrating for me from an ego point of view, because people, it's 33-7. This game is over. You know, people were making proliferate. Look at Cedar Hill. And even at halftime, I had said this game is not far enough out. Just the way the game has gone with the turnovers, Denton Geyer had been sluggish. I never felt comfortable saying, and that's the difference between the John Tyler game. I felt that if we played this game, 10 times again, we talked about the rock wall and Allen's going to win 9 games. I think then Geyer wins 9 games.
Yeah, I do too.
This is just a different route to get
this
there.
This was the one chance, but this was in the percentages that Cedar Hill should have won this game.
Right.
Everything broke right for them up until it stopped breaking right. And that goes by what you say. And we're not running down coaches. We don't do that. But you made the point. I don't think anybody would disagree or feel like you're running down. But Carlos Land kind of has that Reginald Samples where it seems like when things are going right, there's no better coach to have.
Right.
The problem is when things break wrong, they tend to – it's not that they act wrong, make bad decisions. They don't make any decisions to try to change. There was no change. There was, let's do something different now. The tide is falling. They stick to the road too much. So when they have the team that can beat you, they're going to win. When you can out-coach them, you get out-coached. And I'm not – Reggie Samples, I think, will get to peel that off finally this year. And in all fairness, last year, that was nothing he could do about that. That was literally the football gods laughing at him and saying, ha, just wanted to take it away from you one more time.
Don't worry.
You're getting it next year, buddy. I just had to. I just had to. But Carlos Lynn does have that kind of – I don't want to say reputation because that makes it sound bad.
Right.
But I don't think at any time John Walsh looked across the field and go, oh, crap, what am I going to do? I'm coaching against Carlos Lynn. I really don't.
Right. And I said this on Twitter, and I think Cedar Hill fans can maybe take a little bit of umbrage. I think he learned.
I actually agree with you on that.
Yeah, I think he got coached up in that moment, and he realized – I got to do things differently. I think he is going to be a better coach because that happened to him, and I think he's going to embrace more of the crazy and understanding the momentum and how to break things up. And you can't experience it until you experience it. And that helpless feeling of nothing I can do, because his team only had the ball one time in the second half. I mean, that's the kind of – well, I think they had a second time at the end of the game when it was, too late.
But again, at some point, you stop that.
You stop that.
You are not talking about – it's not like Denton Geyer all of a sudden had a running back that you literally physically can't tackle. They were doing a play that is a low percentage play in itself, and they were hitting the slot machine every time.
Right.
At some point – go unplug the slot machine.
You go unplug the slot machine. You coach them up. You try different schemes. You instead of trying to catch the ball, you knock it out of bounds, because all you got to do is just get the ball out of bounds and you're good.
Exactly. Anything. Even if it's not working, try something new. Again, it goes back to when we talk. When I get so annoyed when people say Plano East John Tyler greatest high school football game ever. It was terrible coaching. And Alan Wilson will admit that to this. No, but you know what I mean. Same thing we're saying. Alan Wilson admits it to this day. At some point, we should have just done something different.
Right.
And I agree. I don't think Carlos Leno, if he ever gets in this situation again, hey, don't ever let off the gas. I am so tired, especially in the playoffs. I don't care if a team scores 90. It's the playoffs. Yeah. You keep the pedal going until the other team tells you, hey, look, we're just going to run. And I was actually talking to a coach that's won a state championship, and they have a tendency at times to, and I don't mean even Refugio, because everybody's always, oh, you're talking about Refugio, but they tend to win their games going away in the playoffs. And I asked him, I said, when do you let off the gas? He says, when the other team starts, when they give me three straight runs in the second half when I'm up, that's when I know the game's over.
Right.
He goes, that's when I let the throttle off. He goes, but why am I going to, if I'm up five touchdowns, why not make it six and completely be safe instead of, oh, we'll be safe here. Oh, all of a sudden they get a touchdown. It's a four touchdown game. Then they return it. You know, just let the other team tell you.
And this weekend we had that almost happen again with the Arlington Lamar Midland Lee game, because they were up 35-0 in that game, and that was a game where Arlington Lamar was throwing in the end zone to win the game with seconds left, and probably should have won.
Well, and then in 4A we had Brownwood and Alvarado.
Yeah, those
Alvarado jumped up, and some people will say that Brownwood let off the gas, and partially they had their head coach had some issues and was actually coaching from the press box. And I will say that probably had a lot to do with it, because one of the things people don't understand, a head coach's job is to read the room.
Right.
It's really hard for a head coach to read the sideline if he is sitting up in a press box. The coaches can tell him, oh, they're feeling tight, or but you don't know, especially if you're a coach, that's one of your strengths is reading your – and I think that's where John Walsh, where he knows when to unleash wild-ass football.
Right.
He reads his team really well, and he reads the game really well. And that's something that can't be taught. We can bitch about, like, if you're a Cowboy fan, you can bitch about Jason Garrett against Bill Belichick, and Jason Garrett, blah, 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 blah. It's not Jason Garrett's fault. Bill Belichick just thinks on another level.
Right.
He reads the football game better. He can literally sit and tell you what's going to happen in a game before it happens, simply because he knows, he has the experience and the ability to read it. And John Walsh is an expert at that. What some people think he's bombastic. I tend to love bombastic coaches.
I love bombastic coaches.
John Walsh is one of my favorites, all because I was going back to Texas Stadium. I was if you don't, I know you remember, Diggs, but I used to go there and basically get all the rights for all the games at a day, and would just get there at 8 in the morning and be there till midnight broadcasting every game.
Right.
So this was right when Geyer was starting to become big, and this was a couple years before the great Longview runs, where them and Longview met 2 years and the block punt and all that. And they were playing some slap team in the first round or second round. They won 45-0. And he came up to the booth after he came up into the press box after the game and was going to watch the rest of the game. The team went home and he stayed there. So I got him to come on, and that was big for me at that time. Yeah. All me and my 32 listeners to the game. And so I'm like, Coach, what are your thoughts? And he'd be like, well, we whooped their ass, didn't we? And I'm like, this is live, Coach. He goes, oh. It was a really strong game, and it was really tough. Ever since that moment, though, I loved it, because when he thought I was recording it, he was fine saying that, right, we whooped their ass. I love coaches like that. Now, where do you want to go after all that?
I think that
we could have literally just made a show on that. We're at 41 minutes. Well, just on those three games. That's how impactful, though. I mean, those three games didn't just impact the DFW. It impacted all of 5A and 6A.
It did. So if you're going to have me as the producer, I'd say throw it to that commercial break and let's talk the games next week.
Now, that sounds really good. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the games this week. Thanksgiving week, it's always the mythical. If you're practicing on Thanksgiving, that means you've had a successful season. To me, that means even more when we're actually in the third round. Every once in a while, when it's in the second round, it doesn't feel like that. But we'll talk about those matchups coming up on the Top Shelf Sauce at DFW Metroplex Huddle.
Does mini helmets? Yeah. Custom-designed mini helmets that match your school. When quality and attention to detail are important, choose authentic Lone Star Gridiron mini helmets. Our library currently has hundreds of different Texas high school football teams. If you don't see your helmet, reach out to us about creating one. And hey, they make the coolest fundraisers for your booster clubs. Go to LoneStarGridiron.com and look for mini helmets on the top menu bar.
Carry on, my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Kevin and Matt Diggs here. Little Top Shelf Salsa DFW Metroplex Huddle. Also, I want to thank Eric Bartell. Coaching matters in football, but it matters so much more with your financial plan. Eric Bartell can help you with that. Now, the name of his firm is called Financial Coaching. And the reason it's called that is he grew up in a coaching family. He actually started this firm to help coaches with their financial planning, setting up for retirement, dealing with retirement from the educational system and things like that. And he's expanded out to the normal people. But he was a D1 athlete, grew up in a coach's family, has an absolute love for football. Unfortunately, he's also a Houston Astro fan. We will forgive him for that. You can follow him on Twitter and tell him how much you dislike him being an Astro fan if you'd like, at Eric Bartell. You can also give him a call at 817-274-7844 to help you with any of your financial needs. And, I mean, it's real cool. You give him a call, he'll give you an appointment. He doesn't charge you for anything. All you got to do is you just say, this is what I want to do. And he'll say, okay, this is what I can do for you, and go from there. You can also email him at eric@gotofinancialcoaching.com. All right, so we talked about last week's event. And again, I have a feeling that if there are podcast-style shows 30 years from now, that this weekend will be talked about. DFW, I don't know if we've seen a weekend like that in a long time. We have potential for some craziness this weekend. What are some of the games you want to discuss?
Well, I think that we kind of gave the Longview Jesuit upset warning, and one of the bigger games this week for me is Arlington Martin against Duncanville, because Arlington Martin has created such craziness in their football. They have the formula to beat Duncanville. And Duncanville, kind of like Longview, has a lot of questions for me because they play such a style of football. They're not going to win games 84-6 like Southlake does. So it's when it's time for Duncanville to play a team that has a good defense, good special teams, will they come in and take care of business, or will Martin just run through them? I've seen Martin with my own eyes a couple times this year, and I never walk away from Martin going, wow, I can't, you know, I walked away from Rockwell saying, wow, and Guyer against the lead over week one, wow. I look away from Martin going, when is this going to get blown up? When is this going to get exposed? This is all smoke and mirrors. And will this be the week that it gets exposed, or will it be the perfect storm to blow up in the face of Duncanville, which for me, you know, they put it on Flower Mound a little bit, but Flower Mound always gets put on them in the playoffs.
Yeah, they do.
They are perpetually known for, you know, giving up 80 to Euless Trinity and 50 to better teams, and even getting upset by Denton Guyer last year in the first round of the playoffs when Denton Guyer was so young and barely made the playoffs, and Flower Mound won that district. So I don't know what to make of this game. I saw a couple of computer polls where Arlington Martin is a favorite in this game. And to me, Duncanville is a 17-point favorite in this game. But I also know that Coach Wager has that ability to tap, you know, same colors as Denton Guyer, to tap into some wild-ass football,
yes,
special teams plays. And I think just coaching can knock that down to about a one-possession game. So it's one of those games where, you know, All of the potential outcomes I could see happening, and I could see the storyline to get there. So now it's our job as prognosticators to say what is the most likely storyline that will get there, and I think the most likely storyline is Duncanville is going to probably win a 24-6 sort of game.
I could see this being a game where Martin does throw out some of those things. Some will hit, some won't, and it'll be closer than what maybe people think, unless people get into the Rockwall Allen and start saying it's going to be closer just because they're trying to be different.
Right.
I think this could be closer at half, but I honestly, as much as we talk about what we said in the first segment about like Carlos Lynn and Samples, I think Samples, unlike other coaches, understands the reputation around him.
Right.
I think you could see that on his face last year. It wasn't just losing a state championship on a Hail Mary. This was finally the time. After it felt like there's been 3-4 years of when he, especially when he was at Skyline, that he had teams that would be, oh, this is the time.
Right.
You could just see it on his face. And one of the, I mean, seriously, everybody else thinks of Galena Park North Shore's reaction, and that, I remember just the camera on him, and he's got his arms around, I don't know if it was his dad or somebody, and the look on his face, you could legitimately tell that if that team would have been senior laden, I don't know if he might not have retired.
Right.
I think the thing that kept him going was, hey, that was a junior laden team. You're back. You're going to be back. Don't see him being denied this year. Maybe it's part of me I'm rooting for him, because he is, as much as I said that about his reputation, as a man, he is one of the nicest men. Yeah. And he's the type of man that if he was sitting right here, we gave our opinion, he might go, you know, I disagree with everything y'all said about me, but I respect the fact that y'all have that opinion.
Right.
He wouldn't be, oh, well, you know, like some coaches are, where they just
get defensive.
They have a bubble. They don't believe a coach should ever be questioned. You know, he's not that way. And so maybe part of me that's rooting for him, and it's also Duncanville. I've always laughed. They're called the City of Champions because they had the 1 year when they won state in 98 and they always had basketball, and they thought that, okay, we're the City of Champions, and then the football team hasn't been back to the state championship. I think the Warriors throw what they can at them, but I think Duncanville does have way too many Jimmys and Joes.
I agree with that. And then you get down to Region 2, which has been completely uplifted. Another thing we completely called last week was the Prosper Mesquite game.
Yes.
That this Prosper pretty much took them out to the woodshed. But for me, what's interesting in that game, and I don't want to try to come across as a Houston expert because I don't follow Houston, and I kind of have a DFW bias to where I don't really care much about Houston football, and I'm not going to spend my time researching Houston. But I can tell you, if you're going to tell me what are the five seminal programs in Houston, the Woodlands is going to be on that list.
Heck yeah.
Katy, North Shore, the Woodlands. You know.
I mean, they started back when they were Conroe McCullough. They have... When you think of Houston in the 2000s, it's the Woodlands and Katy, Galena Park, North Shore. But Galena Park, North Shore, they won state in 04, then they won state last year, but then they spent 10 years just kind of getting beaten in the third and fourth rounds.
Right.
Woodlands and Katy are the two that always have come out. You see them in your region, on your half of the bracket, you go, oh, crap.
Yep. And this has been the kind, you know, they played Allen like incredibly well a couple of years ago. And you just get to the point where it's the playoffs, and all I got to do is see this is a 50-50 game. I'm taking the Woodlands without a doubt. Because and I've done that in the first two games. Everybody thought the Woodlands was going to be a one and done.
Yeah.
And they keep winning. And I think as a 50-50 game, just because their kids and you know, their brothers have been used to this success, and Prosper is still kind of new to this at the 6A level. I think the Woodlands it'll be a close game, but I think the Woodlands will pull out a one-score win against the Prosper.
I think Prosper is a year too early. I do think, you know, you and I had talked a little bit about Prosper over this whole season, and because, again, you being Plano East, and again, with Allen being in your district, we had to talk them.
Right.
You and I kind of feel Prosper's the next, going to be one of the big programs that's coming up. I think they're a year short, and I think, again, though, only because you've got a Woodlands program that when they know how to win, they know how to win. And, I mean, their head coach, Jim Rapp, before he was the head coach, he was there 27, 28 years,
right.
I think it was, as the offensive coordinator. So he knows how the Woodlands plays, and he knows how to game plan, and he knows when it's time to unleash their version of wild-ass football. And they will do it. They're a type of team, again, they're a type of team you see them in the regular season. They're running very basic stuff, and then they'll get in the playoffs, and you'll go, wow, when did they become a spread team? Or, wow, when did they start using a wing offset all the time? I think Prosper's. This is a great learning experience for Prosper,
absolutely.
And I think they're going to learn from this game and move on. Because I do think they're the better team, and this is not a knock on their coach at all. I just think the Woodlands is one of those programs you don't play in the third round of the playoffs.
Yeah, you don't want to play them. Prosper, you know, this is a new coach to getting this far in the playoffs. He was a coordinator when Prosper was doing, you know, some Prosper things in 4A, but. It's hard to pick against the Woodlands at this point. And, you know, I also look at the region, and again, I'm not a Houston person, but I see Katy, Galena Park, North Shore, and it's like we talk about Frisco, Lone Star, Highland Park rematches, and that's going to be another rematch, and that's going to basically – we'll probably see the winner of this in at AT&T at the end of the year. I know Lake Travis will probably have something to say about it, but – you know, when you get to that side of the bracket, the winner of that game will likely make it to the state championship. And that's just fun football right there. When you got those two powerhouses going at each other, I don't even have to like Houston football to know that I'm going to be watching those scores come across. And I think it'll probably be a one possession game. I'm not even going to pick it. I'm just going to point out, if you're like me and you're very DFW based, keep an eye on Katy, Galena Park, North Shore.
I agree. I mean, that game was a classic at the beginning of the year. It's kind of known that Galena Park North Shore running back kind of made his his feelings known after that game, how unhappy he was with the coaching. kind of, it was a weird situation. You know, it was like watching a pro game where you see that on Twitter, you'll see code words about players and stuff. And he kind of did that, and it kind of led to some interesting things. So I'm curious about that. All right, so what other DFW games?
Well, Division II 6A has some interesting games. You got Guyer against Arlington. I think Guyer is, you know, probably a two-score favorite over Arlington. I hate talking about Tascosa, Marcus, because last year, I hate talking about Tascosa, and I'm like, I can talk about Marcus all day, because Tascosa went on a run to the state semifinals where they ended up losing to Longview.
Gave Longview everything they could handle.
Gave Long, and I was on their bulletin board every week because I picked against them every week. So I want to give them the respect that they earned last year in giving Longview all they want. If things broke differently, we could be talking about a Tascosa state title and how all that worked. But again, Marcus with Nussmeier just seems to be such a special team. I picked against Tascosa last week. They took care of Bowie. Now I'm going to pick against Tascosa this week. It's hard to say, but I think Marcus has just got a special team going on. And I want to give a shout-out to Lake Highlands because they lost to Lake Highlands last week. Lake Highlands is going to be one of those teams that I don't think people are going to talk about next year at the beginning, but they should be. They got everybody coming back with Colson at quarterback, yeah. And they're going to be a team that, you know, if you want a dark horse next year, look to Lake Highlands. They're a year away as well. So give Lake Highlands their due. They might be back. And then on the bottom half, I think even though we have Jesuit with all of the happy things with beating Longview, I think this region is going to go Houston-based. I think Klein Collins and Westfield are going to be playing each other next week for the regional championship. And again, Houston football.
I don't know, man. I kind of felt like that win reminded me of Spring Decaney when they had went to A&M, Trayvon Williams. Yeah, Trayvon Williams. And they literally ran the table in one state because of him. I mean, the team was good, but it literally was. I broadcast them doing Mansfield in the semifinals, or Mansfield-Timberview, I can't remember who it was. And 10 of the players went Mansfield way talent. The problem was is the one that didn't was him, and he was so much better. He went like 38 carries. 20. I kind of see Jesuit maybe making that, dude. This kind of feels like you're about to see a stretch where E.J. Smith is getting 200 yards, 250 yards, 300 yards, and they're just each week beating teams that are better but not – remarkably better, and none of them left, at least until the semifinals, you go, oh, they're three touchdowns better. There's no Duncanville in front of them and things like that. And this just feels like that bracket where that one player gets on that run. And it's also, I'd say, it's kind of magical. He was supposedly maybe not going to be there for the playoffs, or if he was in it, they'd have to get to the semifinals.
Right.
And then he walks in hours before the first round game and says, nope, my hand's good, we got this. I'm just saying, man, and they're a Christian school.
It is a story, and I mean, I have this ongoing joke with Matt Smith because he's in seminary school right now, and when we're picking private schools against public schools, he almost always picks private schools to win because of his Christian foundation. And I was like, last week, kind of as a shout-out to him, I was like, watch out for both Jesuits, and then straight Jesuit beat Westbrook in the Houston area as well. And, you know, there's something to be said for the fact that, you know, the private schools have some advantages going on, but I think this week it's going to be the end for Jesuit. But the story you just told is a fun story. It's a good story. I'll be cheering as a fan for that story, but I think Klein Collins is not going to overlook Jesuit. I think now that Jesuit has kind of put themselves out there, just as likely as you see those Spring Decaneys, you see a team pulling an upset in the next week, spitting the bit.
Oh, yeah, so, that's true. That's a good point.
So you see that just as often as well. So.
And you probably see it more. The ones that stand out, though, are the Spring Decaneys on the magical runs.
Then going to 5A, we got some rematches. Three of the four teams in 4-5A have made it, as we kind of expected. Birdville and Colleyville Heritage will be having a rematch at the Star. Birdville won that first game by 1 point late.
You got a rematch of a great game. You've got the star player for Birdville as a former Heritage player. That's a lot. That's one of those games that nobody outside those two ISDs understand. There's a lot of emotion in that game.
Sure.
As much as we're all talking Highland Park and Lone Star rematch, That's been a game because I do the Colleyville Heritage coaches show. That's a game. As soon as that game was over, I could tell they were rooting for Birdville because they want to play them.
They want to play them again. And, you know, it's weird because I picked Heritage to win that first game, and I was a little shocked that Birdville won that game. And then Colleyville Heritage has kind of been playing, you know, that Crowley game where they had to go to overtime. Yep. It just wasn't a convincing win. I don't know what to make of this game, this Birdville Heritage rematch. I think Heritage is a better team, but Birdville just seems to be on that second level. But at the same time, it's hard to get emotionally invested because I know that either of these teams are going to be a 5-touchdown underdog to Denton Ryan.
Exactly. Which, again, they're all three in the same. I mean, it's weird. That is one of the weakest districts in all of the state because Denton Ryan is 2 touchdowns better than Birdville and 3 touchdowns better than Heritage. But Birdville and Heritage are really good teams.
Right.
And they're still all around. But the whole – and then you look at the Carrollton schools. Yeah, it is hard as a guy like we do that we have to look at the totality. I sometimes get accused of in the right when I'm talking 4A and 3A. I don't – like Palestine and – I can't remember who they're playing off the top of my head. Palestine 7-5, and they're playing a team – I can't believe I can't remember. Oh, Midlothian Heritage. Yeah. They're 8-4. The winner of that plays Carthage.
Right.
So last night I literally wanted to spend a second on that. Grant's like, no, let's talk about the game. I'm like, why? They're going to get their butts kicked by Carthage. Why does it matter? And he goes, because for one of these teams, they get to play for another week. They're fan base. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. I have a hard time. Yeah. I have a hard time doing that when I know the eventual outcome.
Right.
And so, yeah, I agree. But inside the program, I'll attest that this is almost as big as the winner of this game. If they get their butts beat next week, I'm not going to say they're smiling, but they beat the rivalries between Birdville and Heritage, not Denton Ryan.
Right. And I think they kind of know what's coming with Denton Ryan. Denton Ryan's just a completely different animal.
Yeah.
I tend to go back to picking Heritage again, but Birdville, Stone Earl, just a good football team. A true 50-50 game.
Yeah, I think it is one of the true that there are many scenarios. I could see any scenario play out. I won't be shocked. Birdville win by 2 touchdowns. Heritage win by 2 touchdowns. Either one of them win by 1 point again. I'd be like, yeah, I saw that coming. Because it's just – there's no feel for the game.
Right. And, we could talk about Lone Star Highland Park again and repeat things. Why don't you just promote the sister show?
You can hear Dick say on the Frisco ISD show that Lone Star would win by 42 points.
That's right.
Just check the link. No, it's the Frisco ISD football show. And it's weird. It's a highly anticipated game, but it's been so highly anticipated, it was talked out before the game was even got here.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about this for 10 weeks. You know, we're looking forward to the trends of this. We talked about Allen and Rockwall.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about Southlake and Duncanville. These are games that you just kind of pencil in. I mean, Argyle in Waco La Vega has been our consistent talk. It's like our 4A go-to, La Vega and Argyle.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, so we talk it out, and we talked it out on the Frisco ISD show. It is going to be a game where you've got the coaching mismatches and just the different things that can happen. I did pick, for the record, if you don't want to go listen to it, I'm going to take Lone Star in a close game, but you're on the record. If it's close, it's Highland Park.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm hosting the Frisco ISD show, and I went against every Frisco team, actually.
You did.
Maybe I'm just ready for one last show before the season ends. I hate to say it that way, but it is – when you have these matchups that you know are going to happen, they're fun until you get to the actual week. And then it's just like, well, I mean, what else can you add to it? We all, like you said, that's literally been filler. Okay, the Frisco show's a little short. Well, hey, let's talk about where Lone Star's at compared to where Island Park's at.
And talk about the trends with that.
Yeah, and it just, so now that it's here, you're just like, okay, well, we're done. Let's just play the game. Yeah. Let's just get to the game.
And we are going to play the game Friday after Thanksgiving. Going to be fun. For me, and this is something that's not really DFW, but it's ish, you know, the very broadly the based thing. In Region 2 and 5A, you've got the three 5A teams, all four have won 2 straight weeks. Mm-hmm. So basically the next 2 weeks you have a battle royal, so to speak. You've got all four teams playing each other. One of the, in like a second round of that almost gets back to when the East Texas teams did round robin.
Oh man, yeah, that was two fun years
for a while. And how great is it? Even though I admit the quality of the football game is not anything what you're going to see anywhere else. That you have Wichita Falls, Wichita Falls Rider in the playoffs in the third round, and that's what this. Breaking the divisions up gets you when you have a completely dominant region like this, a dominant district. You get two rounds, and we're also talking about it with the East Texas schools when you got the Gilmer and you got Texas Texarkana Pleasant Grove.
Yeah,
you get those rematches and how fun those rivalries are getting to show off in the playoffs.
Well, I want to say this, and this isn't the Wichita Falls football show, but I think back of where we were in about 2007 or 8, and it's when Old High and Everman played in the playoffs. Old High had upset somebody in the first round, and that meant it was out at Justin, I think it was. And at that time, it was Ryder, and then every other Wichita Falls program was crap. Now you look, and all of a sudden, Wichita Falls has become a solid football program. I mean, football town. Not only Wichita Falls Rider, but Wichita Falls Hershey. This year they were down, but last year they had one of the best running backs in the state of Texas. You had Wichita Falls City. They finished second to Gunner this year, and they got upset last week. But I mean, Wichita Falls has done a 180 over the last 10 years to where. This is actually, even for me, I'm not a DFW guy or a Wichita Falls guy, but I am interested in this game.
Oh, yeah. I've been out in Oil Bowls and out there at Memorial Stadium, and I bet this place will be packed, and it will be a fun atmosphere. Again, it's not going to be great football, and I would submit to you Lubbock Cooper is still three touchdowns better than all four of these teams.
I agree.
And I would submit to you that Aledo's three touchdowns better than the best team in this region.
I agree.
So you put all those things, it's just kind of afterthoughts, like you talked about with Carthage. But still, for that time period, for this week, the fact that you're going to have Wichita Falls and Ryder playing Thanksgiving football, that rivalry, that it doesn't get much better than that as far as a rivalry perspective. So I got to throw that out.
That feels like a game that should be on Turkey Day. That should be on Thanksgiving night.
Thanksgiving night after all that has rolled through. I kind of want to talk a little 4A football.
Let's go.
I've got a chance to watch some 4A football the last couple of weeks. I got a chance to see Melissa China Spring.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a game that I thought China Spring should have won.
Yeah.
But their quarterback went down, and that was kind of it. They lost their momentum. But Melissa is a very interesting football team. They have a very good offensive line, especially for a 4A program. And do you think that, knowing what you know about La Vega, that being able to, if needed, just run down La Vega's throat is a recipe for like the Jesuit Longview thing, or is La Vega's defensive front seven so talented it's not going to matter?
They're not as talented as they were last year. That La Vega defense, I'll contend last year, if you put them in any other era, if you put them in the 80s, they would have produced Dangerfield-like numbers. But they're still pretty darn talented. The way you beat La Vega, honestly, and it sounds funny because you're going to think it's crazy because they have a ton of athletes. The way you beat a La Vega is they're so confident in themselves, they're going to put a lot of one-on-one matchups out on the outside. You beat them deep. You get them in zero coverage, and you get a Cole Kirkpatrick for Argyle. You get him to, if your quarterback can survive long enough for him to run a double route, you're going to get two of those a half. You go, you get those, you connect on those, that's 14 points right there. You then get it into a one-possession game, and then you get the thing that La Vega still has a tendency to fumble the ball and to make mistakes in close games. What they've been able to do the last couple of years is they out-athlete everybody so much, the games just aren't close. I don't think Melissa has a chance in this game. I love what Melissa's done, new coach this year. Last year, they had the stud wide receiver, they had the stud running back, and they had the stud quarterback, yet they didn't feel like a team. We went and saw them in the last game last year against Argyle, and they looked so disinterested to play. This year, it feels completely different. They still have Jabray Young, but they don't really use him as a star back anymore. They kind of use him out of the slot. They use him at little different points, but he's not their main guy. Running back, Brandon Lewis, the quarterback, is an absolute beast. But I just don't think at the end of the day they have enough Jimmys and Joes. I think it's close for a little while, but I think La Vega's running game just grinds Melissa down.
Yeah, Brendan Lewis is a good quarterback for Melissa, good dual threat sort of guy. I think they have the receivers who can go out on the edges and perhaps manipulate that. Certainly the offensive line will be able to hold for a little bit in pass protection, but I saw some big plays overthrown last week against China Spring. But they will go deep, you know, five, seven times. Half. So I think that will be an opportunity for them. But like you, I think La Vega probably ends up being a 2 to 3 touchdown favorite, even if it stays close for a half. Argyle is an interesting thing. You talked about it last week with Stephenville that, you know, that's a game to watch out for. Argyle's defense is not state championship defense.
No, it's not. And I've said that now. I said it before the playoffs. You can listen on Sideline to Sideline, go back. I've been saying that. I think I first brought it up. It was the same with you. The La Vega one I didn't really care about. La Vega's good. I expected them to score. But when Liberty Isle scored 42 – like, come on. And it was a good 42. It wasn't a – Argyle won 63-42, but it wasn't like Argyle jumped out 42-0. That was – they were down 21-0 at one point to Liberty Isle. I started going, okay, wait a minute. And then they gave up 48 to Melissa. And then you go, okay, they're going to get it right in the playoffs. And then right. Lo and behold, Stephenville – and, yeah, Stephenville did get like a block punt for a touchdown and a couple other things. But that all is the same. That all encompasses defense. Special teams is defense to me.
Right.
They're not going to – that defense is better. If they have to play Carthage, they're not going to outscore Carthage and win because Carthage will stop them a couple times. Brownwood, though, this is not the team. I think Argyle gets right with ball because Brownwood's strength is their defense. At one point until they played La Vega and lost to La Vega second week to the district or last week of the district season, Brownwood led all the state in 4A in points per game given up. Right. They were dethroned. La Vega showed, though, a lot of that was who they've played. And La Vega scored 31, and La Vega's offense is nowhere near as efficient as Bo Hogaboom and Cole Kirkpatrick and that offensive Tito Rawls and that offensive line. Argyle's going to plow Brownwood. I just don't think Brownwood has the offense to stay with them.
We will see. And at the last part of this segment, we'll play a little game here. I will let you make a decision in my life right here because I haven't decided where I want to go Friday night. And I've got two contenders, but mostly because I'm lazy and I want to see some small school football. You got Gilmer Wake O'Connelly at Allen. And
yep.
You got the Frisco Independence Lancaster at Richardson. I don't know Gilmer Wake O'Connelly. But again, it's an Allen. So, you know, and I know that this region, I would love to see a Pleasant Grove Gilmer rematch. I'm going to go see Malakoff and Pottsboro at Wiley. So, which of those games would you see? What do you, from your sideline?
So, my choice
stuff,
is Gilmer and Wake O'Connelly and who?
And you got Lancaster and Frisco Independence.
Oh, I'd go see Gilmer and Wake O'Connelly.
Why?
Because, A, I will be the first to admit I have undersold Connelly. I thought that they were a very hollow state, a top five team. I believe every year there's at least two teams that are ranked early that will survive through the season, and you go, okay, yeah, they're top five and they're undefeated, but are they really? Last week, to me, showed that. I thought for a while that it was for sure a Pleasant Grove-Gilmer rematch coming, and I would love to see that, but part of me now wants to see Connelly, and that because Connelly might be the only team in 4A Division One or Division Two that can play with Pleasant Grove. They've got Javion Sunday, who is maybe the best back in all classifications. They got an offensive line that is freaking huge. They got a defense that isn't overly athletic, but they know where to be, so that makes them look faster than they really are. In saying that, though, Gilmer, man, you've got a team that last year, they kind of, about halfway through the season, they were getting their doors blown up, and so they kind of changed things. And they kind of went away from that Gilmer spread offense where they were throwing the ball over the field and throwing the screen. And they still do that. But they went back to, I don't know, you remember when Gilmer and Dallas Roosevelt played and they had the big fight?
Yeah, the big fight.
Well, back then, that offensive program for Gilmer was a run base. They had Justin Johnson at running back. They had David Snow, the big center that went to Texas. They had a whole offensive line of D1 talent. That is what they reconverted to last year halfway through the season. That's what they've ran with all year this year. They shut out Newton. They out-Newtoned to Newton with a ground game and just ground them down and beat them 16-0. I was a little shocked that Pleasant Grove did beat them as bad as I did. I thought they would beat them in district, but I think Gilmer is circling that game. I just don't know if they have enough to get past the Cadets. I think that's a one-possession game. We went back and forth on that game last night about 20 minutes on our show because it's one of those games that I feel like I have a feel for the game, but I don't trust my feel because I haven't trusted Connolly all year, right. And they've proved me wrong. And I feel like, okay, if I give them the trust this week and Gilmer beats them by 3 touchdowns, you know, but, yeah, that's the game. I don't think – look, we ain't on the Frisco show. I think Lancaster's going to blow the doors off Independence.
Right.
You know, I was being nice on it and trying to say it, 2 touchdowns. Unless Independence just completely fumbles Lancaster fumbles 3 or 4 times, which they can do sometimes, I just don't think that they beat them. I watched some of the highlights of the Independence-Texas High game, and I was kind of underwhelmed on both sides of the ball. The one dude for Independence is a stud. Everybody else, I was like, they got through that district because that district was pretty good. I mean, it wasn't all-star top 5 teams, but really, they're still alive. So I would go to Waco, Connolly, Gilmer. I think that's a one-possession, 35-34 type of game.
Okay, you have sold me.
And I want my $20. Is that it?
That's it.
Oh, wow. By the way, you can not only check out Diggs on the Frisco show and the DFW show. As soon as we get done with this, we're recording the East Texas show because I want we have stories to tell about you and East Texas back in the day. But I wanted to get his perspective on some East Texas games. So you can check that out. Also, again, check out TopShelfSalsa.com. Get all your salsa needs from them. Got some big news coming out with them. They're going to be doing some stuff with us at the state championship weekend. We have news announced on that. We can't do it yet. But let's just say it looks like we might have our own booth.
Okay.
Where we're going to be able to do pregame and postgame stuff live inside while we're also sitting there eating the chili cheese dogs. And still one of the most underrated parts about the media up there is the food. You have to pay up there, you get the discounted price, and the quality is top. Well, I mean, it's chili cheese dogs and nachos, but damn it, they're good chili cheese dogs and nachos.
I still think I'm trying to recover from the ultimate nachos from this past week.
So. Oh, yeah. I was reading about that. You really did that?
Yes.
Because you don't really have the tummy for that.
I did.
You just got to do it every once in a while.
Got to do it every now and then.
We do want to thank everybody for joining us. I want to remind everybody you can email me any questions you have on the show, Terry@LoneStarGridIron.com. We will be back next week. We'll be back on the traditional way we're doing it. But we're here. We're here till every DFW team's eliminated, and we know that's not going to happen till state. And I have a feeling we'd probably still do a show anyway. We'd still want to talk.
The DFW perspective.
Yeah, the DFW. What's it like to look on the outside looking in? But we do appreciate everybody for joining us. Have a safe and happy travels to your football game and for your Thanksgiving holidays. That puts week 3 in the books. Week 4, we'll talk about it next week. He's Matt. I'm Terry. This has been the Top Shelf Salsa DFW Metroplex Huddle right here on the LSG Sports Network. Gone blind. Losing faith in my family had driven me out of my damn mind.